next case for argument will be Territory of American Samoa versus the National Marine Fisheries Service. Just a moment.
May it please the court, Robert Lundman representing the National Marine Fisheries Service. I plan to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. American Samoa filed suit challenging a 2016 rule that was approved by the council and then issued by the service under the Magnuson Act. The 2016 rule revised an earlier 2002 rule, and in the 2002 rule, the agency established a large vessel prohibited area around American Samoa. That rule restricted fishing by longline vessels from American Samoa within 50 miles of the islands, and the purpose was to provide an exclusive area for smaller ALEA fishing vessels that were also from American Samoa. But by 2013 and 14, there had been a significant decline in the number of ALEA vessels fishing, and the longline vessels fishery was collapsing. So the agency didn't get rid of the prohibited area, but shrunk it from a 50-mile prohibition to 12 miles. And American Samoa then sued the agency to challenge the rule.
And is it true that in making this determination to shrink the area that the record does not reflect consultation or consideration of the sessions?
The sessions are addressed in the final rule in the sense that there's a comment from American Samoa saying, you should consider the sessions. The agency says, here's the response, the rule's necessary for these reasons, and there was no need to address
the
sessions.
There's no actual discussion by the agency of
what the – there's no discussion of what the sessions mean and the response.
Right. Thank you.
That doesn't matter because of four reasons here. The first is American Samoa lacks standing. And either on a parens patriae theory or on a direct injury theory. The second reason is even if the sessions here don't protect collective fishing rights, they don't refer to fishing rights of any sort, so there's not any applicable law there that the agency has to consider. Even if they did protect some sort of fishing rights, and there's no language in the session saying so, they wouldn't apply at the high seas area, which is more than 3 miles beyond American Samoa. This rule, the part of the rule they're challenging, only has effect more than 12 miles beyond. And fourth, even though the sessions aren't expressly discussed in the rule, the rule does discuss impacts on American Samoa, on the communities, and on the ALEA fishing that American Samoa is concerned about. And I'll start with standing and parens patriae standing. American Samoa faces the same problem here that all 50 states have when they sue the federal government, which is there is no parens patriae standing to bring suit against the federal government for the states or for American Samoa. And this is a settled issue. The Supreme Court announced this rule clearly in the SNAP decision. Back before that, there's Massachusetts versus Mellon. And from this court, it's very clearly held the same in Nevada versus Burford. So the result is that most of the district court's analysis of standing is wrong because of this bar on a American Samoa or a state suing the federal government on a parens patriae theory. American Samoa cites to the Massachusetts versus EPA Supreme Court decision, but what's lacking from that decision is any indication that that Supreme Court was reversing this long-settled law. It doesn't say it was reversing SNAP or Mellon. It doesn't say it's getting rid of the parens patriae bar for states. And its holding is based on Massachusetts' property interests, its interest as a landowner on coastal land, and not on a parens patriae theory.
But going back, I don't see the Mellon bar as categorical if you read in SNAP the language which talks about a state not having standing to bring an action, but it limits that to relations with the federal government. So this is a distinct and different, as pointed out in Massachusetts v. EPA. So I'm having some trouble. If I understand your argument, you said, well, Massachusetts v. EPA didn't overrule Mellon. You're correct. But the question is it complementary or consistent with Mellon?
I think it's perfectly complementary and consistent with Mellon and SNAP and this court's decision in Nevada versus Burford, which is probably the most like the situation we have here. There, the state of Nevada sued the Bureau of Land Management and said, you, the Bureau of Land Management, have taken an action that's inconsistent with federal law, the National Environmental Policy Act, and it should be set aside. And this court said, no, you can't use parens patriae standing to do that. And that's exactly what we have here. We have American Samoa saying, no, agency, the Fishery Service, your rule is inconsistent with the Magnuson Act, which requires consistency with other applicable law, including these sessions. And so it's
maybe a matter of semantics, but I think it's more than that, because in the Burford case, basically, aren't you in that first part of the Massachusetts v. EPA footnote, which is that the state was suing to protect from the operation of the federal statute. And here, this is a state, or in this case, a territory, asserting a right under federal law. And the right that it asserts, which you, I know you disagree with, the derivation of the cession rights with respect to waters. But let's just assume that it's covered. Isn't that a different type of lawsuit than the Burford lawsuit?
I don't think so. It's the same challenge to a federal agency action. It's the same argument that if the federal agency has violated applicable law, and that the federal agency can't do that because it's harming the people of the state. And I think the other critical point here is I think the Manitoba D.C. Circuit decision's reading of footnote 17 here, which the court just issued, we addressed this in our reply brief, is exactly right, that discussion isn't about the scope of parens patriae standing, but it's rather relates to that court's preface about states receiving special solicitude in the standing analysis. When it comes time for that court, the Massachusetts versus EPA court, to analyze injury, it's not resting on parens patriae. It's saying direct harm to state lands, and that's what causes why Massachusetts has standing. So I don't think footnote 17, as the D.C. Circuit explained in the Manitoba case, means that the parens patriae standing has been scaled back in a way. The rule about the so-called melon bar, as the D.C. Circuit calls it, has been scaled back in that way.
Let me ask you about that. Is this distinction between direct standing and parens patriae standing really a false distinction, and that they really collapse in a case like this? Where the territory, as I understand it, is asserting the rights of its populace and its citizens with respect to the cultural values. Why isn't that direct standing?
I guess that's not direct standing, because it's asserting the rights of its people, and specifically, it's not asserting its own right. And so it's when it's direct standing, it's the state saying, as in Massachusetts, the example of, we own land, climate change is causing sea rise, it's taking away our land, we are directly injured by your action. Or the other time when there's direct standing is when a state says, look, your law requires us, a state or a territory, in American Samoa's case, to do X. We have to do something that we don't want to do, and that infringes our sovereign right to not do that. And that's not...
I appreciate that distinction, but I guess the question here is, why isn't it the territory's cultural rights, which are, I know they're not equivalent to tribal rights as we think of a sovereign, but why as a quasi-sovereign, why isn't that equivalent to saying that as a culture, as a territory, that's what we're protecting?
Well, I think that could be a quasi-sovereign right, but it's not a sovereign right, and it's not a direct injury. It's in that quasi-sovereign basket, which is exactly what parens patriae is for, and that's what you have to show to create parens patriae standing, is establish a quasi-sovereign right. And here, what they've articulated is a quasi-sovereign right to their people, their culture, and it flows from the people, the American Samoan's way of life, and that's not a direct interest of the government, and it's not a direct property interest, and it's not a direct sovereign interest in their governmental process either. So I think it fits in the quasi-sovereign category, which then means it falls under parens patriae. Even if you look at this as a direct right, and we don't think it is, but if you do, they still have an established standing to survive the summary judgment stage. What they point to and the district court relied on, the only assertions from American Samoa are in the rulemaking process, saying we have concerns about impact on aleya fishing, and we think that could then impact our culture. And that's not good enough. They need a declaration or an affidavit from American Samoa government officials spelling out how they are injured, so they can show the concrete, actual injury in fact that they need for standing. And they haven't gone down that path, and they've instead relied primarily on this parens patriae theory that we think is flawed. But even if you conceive of it as a direct injury, they still haven't met their burden for standing.
Is that hold also where it's a procedural injury? In other words, it's not their obligation to come forward to say exactly what the cultural damage is, but only for NIMFS to consider the cessation and what it means and what the cultural implications are.
I don't think they've made a procedural injury argument, so I think that's missing from their briefs. I don't think it's before the court.
So just I'm going to make sure.
Yep.
So you don't think they've made an argument that the failure to consider the cessions is a foundation for remanding?
Well, we're asking for reversal. But they have argued that NIMFS should have considered the cessions. What they're lacking is a procedural right, as in Massachusetts versus the EPA, where the court said, here's a procedural right that's relevant to standing. You have the right to petition and the right to sue on it, and that's part of the Clean Air Act. And also part of the APA. But they haven't identified that sort of failure here, where there's a statutory procedural right that under the Magson Act that has not occurred. They instead say, we have a substantive claim that reducing the large vessel prohibited area violates the text of the cessions. And that's the error. That's their argument. Since I'm getting close to the rebuttal time, I want to move to the merits. And you know, our argument there is pretty simple. The cessions don't protect fishing rights because they say nothing about fishing rights. And you can read the cessions, and there's discussion of individual rights and rights to property and land, but there's no discussion of rights to water or fishing rights. And so we think on the merits, that alone is enough to defeat their argument. And even if there was some discussion of fishing rights, those were then ceded to the United States because the cessions cede all sovereign rights to the land and to the waters. So that's a one-way transfer of authority, all sovereign rights to the United States in the cessions. Even if you disagree with us on that argument about the cessions, we still have this argument about the high seas, which I don't think there's been much of a response to in their brief. At the time, no one had rights beyond 3 miles from shore. It was the high seas. It was open to all. There were no sovereign rights of any country in the early 1900s at the time of the cessions or at the time of ratification in these waters. High seas, open to all. And so the idea that the cessions...
beyond 3 miles?
Beyond 3 miles at the time. Now, there's been later developments on that post-date the cessions and the 1929 ratification, but at the time it was 3 miles. The rule here is more than 12 miles, and so they would not have had any sort of sovereign or property right beyond that 3 mile mark, and so the cessions just could not have reserved any sovereign or property right in that area.
That even if there's a colorable claim on standing, they would lose on the merits of the interpretation of the cessions.
Right. Even if there's a colorable claim on standing, they lose on the plain language of the cessions. Even if you disagree with us, as the district court did, and infer some sort of right that we don't think is there, it still doesn't work because it runs into this high seas problem. Because the issue here is beyond the 3 mile mark. The LVPA, the large vessel prohibited area, now applies up to 12 miles, and their complaint is it doesn't apply up to 50 miles. And the high seas line was the 3 mile line. So we are well beyond that in an area where there were no sovereign rights at the time.
Council, I don't want to take up too much of your time because I know you want to reserve rebuttal time, but I have a couple of questions for you. So assuming the government of American Samoa had come forward with evidence to show that one Alia fisherman would be injured, is that sufficient to confer parens patriae standing? And then my second question is, I believe I heard you say earlier that in this process, the National Marine Fisheries Service actually considered these concerns, these fishing rights concerns, in response to comments. So what would happen if the summary judgment were upheld and this returned to the agency? What would the agency do? Would the agency do anything differently?
So the first question, there is an affidavit in the record from a single Alia fisherman that they submitted that says, I think this rule harms me. But that doesn't create standing for American Samoa for two reasons. One, it doesn't work in their parents' patriae. And in fact, it underscores that there is a distinct group of people who could be harmed by this rule who could sue. And in that case, parents' patriae standing is not available.
Don't they also say in the parents' patriae, though, that you have to have an underlying harm to a citizen, and that's the that's probably the reason they submitted the affidavit or the declaration?
You have to have an injury to a quasi-sovereign interest. I don't know if you need to have a – it's not just equivalent to when a non-governmental organization sues and you have to show an injury to a particular person. I think it's actually the opposite. If you look in SNAP, the issue is whether hundreds of people were a small enough group that parents' patriae would not be available. Here we're talking a single declaration from a single Alia fisherman, you know, active at the time of the rule, between one and three Alia fishermen, and historically active, maybe 20. So it's a discrete group that could have sued directly instead of the American Samoa government, who then could have participated by way of amicus brief or as an additional party. Once one party has standing, then other parties can participate. That's a Judge Beatty's second question. Yes, the agency here looked at the impact on Alia fishing, and that's what the rule is all about. It's about balancing between the impacts on longline fishing and the larger vessels that longline and the Alia fishing. And the result was, after analysis of the impacts on both, we think this adjustment balances those interests the best, and that's what the agency then did. And so it took a look at exactly if American Samoa's rights to the cessions are relevant here, it's because they protect community Alia-type fishing. And the agency here took a look at the impacts on community Alia fishing and the impacts on the American Samoa community as well, as it has to under the statute, putting aside the cessions, and considered, based on the record, that those impacts would not be significant.
Well, I think there might be a difference between talking about Alia fishing in a narrow sense and talking about cultural protection in a broader sense, which the sessions talk about. So that's where I was concerned that you might have mentioned in the administrative hearing that, yeah, well, we looked at Alia fishing, but is there anything in the record that talks about this longstanding principle that the culture of American Samoa would be protected?
Well, I think what the agency did look at is the.
So I mean, I guess the answer to that is yes or no.
The answer to that is they looked at impact on fishing community, which is American Samoa, and so they looked at community impact. And the analysis was no impact here because we're not going to have a negative impact on Alia fishing, and that's the hook. That's how the fish get from the waters to the community. We're not impacting that piece, so we're not impacting all the community practice that's built around fishing and fish that American Samoa is concerned about. The only one last point before I reserve my minute is about cultural practice. I don't think the sessions protect cultural practice broadly. I think it's a specific contextual land, other property, and reference to cultural practice in that category. And you read those all together, I think it's talking about individual rights to land and not a collective right, for example, to fishing, which we don't think is in the session.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Talofa. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Talawenga Eleasalo Va'aleleale, Attorney General of American Samoa, and I'm honored to be here to represent the people of the territory of American Samoa in this important case. Your Honors, also present here today is the Honorable Lemanu Pelechimonga, Lieutenant Governor of American Samoa, and he's sitting in the back there. I just want to inform the court of that. He's here on behalf of the Governor of American Samoa, representing him in this important case. May it please the court. This is not your typical case in some ways, but it's not unusual for the Ninth Circuit to address issues of Native cultural rights, and that's what this case is about. It's a case about protecting the cultural rights of a people that have sworn to be part of the United States government, the greatest country in the world. And the foundation of this union was based on the protection of cultural rights. Counsel is absolutely correct. When my forefathers signed that deed of cession to give up our lands and our sovereignty, we gave everything. We held nothing back. The only thing we held back was protection of our culture. And what did the United States government do with that document? They converted it into federal law. It's part of federal law that this agency should have considered, but they did not. And the court is absolutely correct. And the petitioners have admitted they did not consider the deeds. What did they consider? They considered the Paper Reduction Act. They thought that was more important than the deeds of cession that protects the culture of a people over 120 years old. They considered the Information Act. Again, they thought that was more important. They wrote studies and papers submitting their recommendation for approval of this law or this regulation, saying that they've considered all those things. Missing from that list of consideration is any consideration of the deeds of cession. The petitioners have argued that we do not have standing to be here. We respectfully disagree. Whether it's parens patriae, whether it's Article 3 standing, whether it's special solicitude, Judge McEwen is correct. For this case, all of these principles collapse into one. All three rivers lead to the ocean of standing for American Samoa in this case. Article 3 standing, as we stated from the beginning, there is a substantive injury in this case, and that is preserving the right, the cognizable right of the American Samoa government to preserve its culture.
This is a question that's not troubling, but I think we've got to find an answer to. They argue 3 miles or 12 miles or 50 miles, and you, I think, say your culture requires 50 miles. Where do we look to see that 50 miles is a part of the culture, that you fished 50 miles?
Yes. The deeds of cession identified an area that total approximately 28,000 square miles. Most of this area was ocean. And that's the area that our forefathers agreed to give to the United States, and the United States agreed to accept that and acknowledge that that is ours, and they're going to protect our rights in that area. So that's the basis.
I have no doubt about that, but what I'm wondering, where do we know that traditionally you fished 50 miles?
We know this from the record, the agency record itself. There is studies that were done there that shows the cultural history of fishing in American Samoa is tied directly to its culture, and then the fishing boats, Aleutian fishermen, fish as far as 30 nautical miles away from the waters. Also, this is a culture of, this is an island group. These are Polynesians.
But I think we're talking about 50 miles, aren't we?
50 miles is the rule that was established by the agency back in 2002. And that rule, in our view, provided the protection we needed to nurture and preserve this culture of fishing. Because it's not just fishing in the ocean. It's the activity that happens on land. You know, fishermen go out fishing. When they bring their fish, it's distributed communally to the village, to the pastor. And so this is not just an ocean activity. The impact of taking away this protection affects the land and affects the culture of the people on the land.
That's another point I believe the government brought up, is how you interpret the sessions, because they talk about land. Well, one of them talks about lands and other property, and the other one talks about property according to customs. So has that ever been interpreted as to whether that property includes fish itself as a piece of property, or ocean rights, or anything beyond the physical land that is the territory of Samoa?
Let me approach the question this way. The Hodel decision by the D.C. Circuit is one decision that confirms that the two deeds are to be interpreted together because they talk about the same area. And if you combine the two deeds, what it says is that the United States will protect the culture of American of these native peoples within the area, within the deeded area. And that's what we're asking for. Now, add that to this court's decision in the Parabano case, where the court can infer cultural rights from the text of the document. And then finally, we have the Cougar Den decision by the U.S. Supreme Court, where in that case, the only right provided in the document was the right to use the robes. But based on the interpretation by the Supreme Court, it not only included the right to walk on the road, but to carry goods on the road. That's no different from this case. What we're saying is the U.S. government agreed to protect our cultural rights within the ceded area, the 28,000 square miles. There is no question, and the agency admits, that our culture includes a culture of fishing within that area. And so I think it's very reasonable under Parabano and Cougar Den for this court to conclude that the deeds include the right to fish.
Back though to the 3 mile question, because I don't know what 28,000 square miles is actually, but we're usually familiar with talking about the 3 mile limit. At least we were historically. So, counsel for the government says, well, at the time of the sessions, when we talked about high seas vis-a-vis U.S. jurisdiction, we were talking about 3 miles. And therefore, these can't be interpreted to be something beyond that. And I would appreciate your explanation on that point.
I would approach it this way, using the principles of Cougar Den, that these decisions should be interpreted from the standpoint of the natives. The concept of high seas is not a native concept. It's not a concept that the Samoans and the Polynesian acknowledge. This is a European concept. You know, these superpowers came down and these concepts came up, and that's what we live in, and we agree we're living on it. But at the interpretation of this agreement should be interpreted based on the understanding of the natives at the time when they entered into this agreement. As far as the chiefs of Samoa, Tutuila, Aunu'u, and Manu'a were concerned, they owned all of this waters, and they fished it, and they agreed to give it up to. So the high seas concept to us is a red herring. It doesn't apply here at all.
So in our case law, in the Ninth Circuit, in Costa versus Harris in 2017, the court set out requirements to prove or plead parent patriae standing, And one aspect of that is that the state or the territory in this case must prove a substantial number of its citizens have Article III standing. So there is one declaration in the record. The declaration doesn't indicate that the person who signed it is actually a citizen of American Samoa, but setting that aside, we have a declaration from one person, and we have information in the record that there's one Aaliyah fisherman at this point. How does the government of American Samoa show that a substantial number of its citizens who have Article III standing?
Thank you, Your Honor. The question assumes that this case is just about fishing. It's not. It's about protecting culture. The government of American Samoa initiates this lawsuit to ensure that people who practice the cultural fishing practices continue, because their practicing of culture benefits all of us. It ensures the preservation of our culture. And then, as I said earlier, it's not just the people fishing. It's the activity that happens after the fishing is done. The distribution of the fish, the sharing. Most of these fishermen don't fish to make money. It's part of cultural obligations. Villages gather. They go fishing. That's the harm that the American Samoa government is trying. It's an actual harm to the American Samoa government, because the government has an obligation under the Constitution to protect culture. And that, as recognized by the D.C. Circuit in the Hodel decision, that's a federal congressional policy to protect the culture of American Samoa. And this ruling by the agency is a direct injury to us, because it impacts our ability to protect culture, impacts our constitutional obligation. In the Sausalito case, that's what this court found. Federal action that impacts a local government's ability to execute their duties is basis for standing. That's what this court held in Washington Utilities case, where the agency in question was provided under state law the right to protect the communications right of the people of Washington State. This court held that was sufficient for standing, because the federal action in that case interfered with the local government's ability to execute their obligation. That's exactly what's happening here. This rule inhibits our ability to fulfill our obligation to the people of American Samoa, and that's why we're injured. And removal of this LVPA ruling relieves us of this obligation, so we can continue to protect culture. Direct evidence was presented to this court by the affidavit of one fisherman speaking on behalf of a group of fishermen. Evidence was presented by a comment letter by one fisherman alleging, the record, page 333 of the record, alleging that the removal will impact his ability to fish. The affidavit is in page 33 of the record. The public statement of another fisherman, page 327, also talks about the impact of this rule on their ability to fish. That's what the American Samoa government is trying to protect. We want these people to continue fishing, whether they make money or not. It's the action of fishing that preserves our culture. There's also the statement from Governor Lolo Molinga, page 289 of the record, where the governor speaks about a specific project that is sponsored by the American Samoa government, the Super Aaliyah Project. And the governor said the entire purpose of that project is to encourage local fishermen to go fishing using traditional methods. That too, that state project is impacted by this decision.
So again, something else that puzzles me as I look at this is, before 2002, as I understand it, there was no long vessel prohibition area. So those vessels could fish much closer than 12 miles from the shore. They weren't prohibited in any way. And this is even years after the Magnuson Statute was passed, I think in 1976. So in 2002, a rule was promulgated to create the 50-mile circumference around the around America Samoa and prohibit the long vessels. And as I understand it, that rulemaking did not expressly consider or talk about the sessions, but nobody objected to it then. But now, when that area is reduced, there is an objection. Why is it different? Why did it not matter that they didn't consider the sessions in 2002?
Because the ruling was favorable to protection of culture. And, you know, me as Attorney General and the administration were not there. The fact that we didn't assert our deeds of session back in 2002 doesn't mean we can't assert it now. And we're definitely asserting it now. The 2002 rule, it's complete in the record, statements by the agency that was done to protect the culture of American Samoa. Now, it is the removal of that will absolutely destroy the culture, and we presented specific evidence. Let me turn to the issue of procedural standing. We have asserted procedural standing. We did so in our complaint all the way through the summary judgment argument. And then the procedural argument, basically what it requires is that the MSA requires the agency to consider the deeds of session as applicable law. Now, there's no dispute that they failed to do that. In fact, they said the deeds of session are irrelevant. Their refusal to consider the deeds threatens the concrete interests of the American Samoa government to preserve the culture of Samoa for all American Samoans, including those American Samoans who own long-lining fishing boats.
Well, this also could be a case where you win the battle, lose the war, in the sense that the government says they already considered the Alea fishermen. So if it were to go back and they were to say, well, we already considered the Alea fishermen, and then they write into the review document, including the sessions and the cultural impact, then you'd be in a hard place under the standard of review to get any further relief, wouldn't you?
We would prefer that they consider the deeds. We are asking the court to require the agency to follow federal law. The federal law requires them to consider applicable law. The deeds of session is an applicable law, just like the Paper Reduction Act, the Information Act are considered relevant law. Whether or not this court concludes that the deeds of session covers fishing, the mere fact that the deeds of session covers the entire area under the jurisdiction of this agency, that alone is sufficient for it to be considered applicable law. Let me just turn briefly on the issue of on the merits. As I've stated earlier, the deeds of session, in fact, cover cultural fishing rights of the American Samoa people. And under the principle of Cougar Den, as well as this court's decision in Parolano, that's the only resolution of that case that is possible. The defendants or the petitioner keep saying that they didn't review the deeds, but they considered the impact of the ruling on the Alea fishermen. That's not sufficient. The deeds of session covers more than just Alea fishing. Like I said earlier, it covers and protects culture. The culture of the American Samoa people doesn't just exist out in the deep ocean. It exists on the land. And because of that, they failed to consider it. They failed to consider the
would make a determination as to what is the scope of the deeds of session. In other words, if we were to determine that there's a colorable claim and that the deeds of session were not specifically considered, would that go back to the agency for testimony on the scope of the deeds of session, Or is that a question of law that's decided before a remand?
Your Honor, I see that my time is done. Let me just briefly say that the district court has determined, based on the evidence, communications directly from the agency itself, that they did not consider. They could not have considered it. And
well, I know that. I'm asking you who would make the determination initially as to the scope of what the sessions cover.
I believe that's an issue of law for this court to determine what the deeds provide. And I think the evidence that we presented to the court, the legal arguments of the court below, shows that the deeds of session include the right to fish, just like the Indian tribal rights in the Paravano, as well as the Cougar Den case. Let me just thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a few points. I'll start with standing. The Attorney General said the injury here is to American Samoa's cultural practices. That is a quasi-sovereign interest. They have to show parents patriae standing, meet the requirements, and they haven't here. As to the impact on the Alia fishermen, that just underscores there is someone out there, a person who has a direct injury, who could have sued and had standing, but that's not this lawsuit. There's no one in this lawsuit as a plaintiff other than the territory of American Samoa. He mentioned the Washington Utilities case. That's reversed at the end of Nevada versus Burford. It says that's no longer good law. That's before the SNAP decision, Washington Utilities, and it's reversed in Nevada versus Burford. As to the merits, there's just no language in these sessions creating the right that they want, a generic protection of all cultural rights and practices. There's a mention of waters, but those waters are ceded. That's not the reference to cultural practices or rights that they need to prevail here. And they try to backfill that with sites to the Paravano and Cougar Den. Those are about Indian treaty rights or reservation rights. There's specific languages addressed in those cases about reservations for Indian purposes and to be used as Indians have used them. And that language just isn't here in the sessions. And because it's missing from the sessions, those cases are distinguishable and their claim fails on the merits too, even if you get beyond standing. I see my time's up. Happy to answer any questions, but otherwise we ask for a reversal.
Thank you. I would like to thank both counsel for excellent arguments and your command of the cases as well as the briefing. It's very good on both sides. The case of Territory of American Samoa versus National Marine Fisheries Service is submitted.